This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined as always by my good friend Bradley Chambers. Tonight, the show is brought to you by our friends at Jam Software, makers of the Casper Suite management system for Macs and iOS devices, and we'll tell you more about that as the show goes on. Bradley, good evening.
How's it going?
It's going okay. How are you?
Long day. It's one of those days where you're really, really busy all day long, but you're not even sure what you did. I had my son was injured at his parents' day out class today. He pulled a muscle in his neck, so I had to help my wife deal with that in the middle part of the day. So one of those days.
Do you know how much paperwork you would have to do if that happened in Britain?
Yeah, they gave me one form, and that was it. I didn't have to sign it.
Yeah, well, there's procedures for that sort of thing over here. Update on last week, by the way. Did our first two digital exams yesterday and today. Flawless, without a hitch. I didn't sleep super well before last night, but that's it. We are started. We're not finished. There's still more to go, but the system works. So
I don't know about you, and I'm sure probably most people in here are. And the first thing I do when I get up every morning is I log into Aerohive to make sure all my access points are online, because that means that, you know, the network is functionally working, because that's the edge. So I know if the edge is online, then everything else is kind of working.
Yeah.
So the first thing I do, and this is dumb because I already checked it, as soon as I walk into the building, I'm like usually one of the first people here, it's still early in the morning, is I pull up my phone and watch it connect to Wi-Fi. And I don't know why I do that, but I do that every day. And it's always like this fear. Like if it takes a second longer for whatever reason, it's like, okay, what's up? What's going on?
What has happened?
And that's one of the things I liked about Aerohive's old 120s and like their current 330s is they had different lights on them based on like what stage it was at. So white meant it was connected to a Hive manager, and green meant it was like connected to DHCP and was broadcasting Wi-Fi, but for whatever reason, it wasn't connected to the management system. And one of the beauties of Aerohive is it doesn't have to be connected to the management system to function. So, like, I always go, I pass a 120 on the way in, and so I always just look at it. I don't know why. I always just say, all right, it's white, we're good.
Yep.
Follow the light.
I have one in my classroom just for that reason, although I don't necessarily need it there, and it's not absolutely the optimal placement for that box, but I keep it in my room just so I can have a quick peek all the time to see if we're good or not.
Well, you know, that's different on the 121s is like it goes from orange to white. Mm. And orange is like basically booting up and DHCP, and then white means it's connected.
Yeah.
And I've talked to my SE about that, and like he totally gets it. And he says, I think it's like an issue of getting the lights in enough quantity that can do like multicolored. Apparently like three, because the 120s can do four lights and like the 121s can do two. And right. And so I think it's just like an issue of getting in quantity, like everything else. You know, it's one thing to get it when you don't need 10 of them, but I'm sure they need tens of thousands a year. And he said, that's the issue. He said, oh, but we agree. He said, that's so helpful. You know, it just has a spot test on if somebody says, hey, I can't get connected to the network. You know, that's a good spot test. You know, one of the things I've really come to realize is, you know, in any sort of network of any scope, you're going to have somebody with some sort of issue every day. I mean, somebody, especially with Wi-Fi, somebody's going to have trouble getting connected every day.
Yeah.
You know, and that's there's nothing wrong with your network. That's just part of it. But I've come to realize like 95% of the time it's the client.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the device. Like, I actually picked up a Nexus 7 this week for Insider. It's a Wi-Fi app.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually returning the Nexus 7 because the Wi-Fi is kind of flaky, and I maybe just be the one I got, but like every day when I turn it on, like it doesn't automatically reconnect to Wi-Fi. I have to like manually connect it. And, you know, if I'm a client, if I'm like a user, I'm saying, hey, something's wrong with your Wi-Fi. But I've got, you know, five devices around me that all connect fine every morning. So I know it's not the network. And, you know, and it probably goes to show that there's a reason it's cheaper. Maybe it's made with, you know, parts that aren't as good quality as the ones that are on the iPad. I don't know. And maybe mine was a fluke and that's just a bad one. But clients can be finicky.
It's got an antenna made of wet string.
Well, you know, one of the things I'm wanting, you know, I have Insider on the Mac, and I'm wanting, you know, I wanted to be able to like kind of see the network from the perspective of a mobile user.
Yeah.
And then, so that's the reason I got the Nexus. Well, then in places I got three, you know, full strength Wi-Fi on my iPhone, I was getting like partial strength with the Nexus. And then I started thinking about like the iPad and my MacBook Air. They're both two-stream radios.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, iPad Air, MacBook Air, both two-stream radios, they're roughly the same card at this point. And I imagine going forward that you'll see the iPhone probably get a two-stream radio, maybe even this year. Mm-hmm. So maybe I won't even need to even worry about my Mac's not kind of giving me good data. And I really hope is that Apple will open up the Wi-Fi radio so developers can use, you know, can kind of ping it like you can on Android.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be nice. I mean, I think another thing that I've sort of observed over the past little while is that different versions of the operating system can have huge impacts on the way that it behaves in Wi-Fi. You know, and in particular, obviously, bugs are a big thing. You know, so iOS 7.0 was not a great Wi-Fi citizen. Apple TV of similar vintage was pretty poor. And now it's gotten better with 7.1, but I still see behaviors on 7.1 that I never saw in iOS 6 or earlier. And also, I mean, there were behaviors in iOS 5 that we don't see anymore either that were not particularly good. So it's not just a pure regression, but it's just changes, you know, there's more in the software stack than you think as well.
Yeah, and I think the rush for a lot of people is to say the Wi-Fi is broken, but
yeah,
you've got a lot a device does before it connects to Wi-Fi. You know, our photographer was here shooting our spring pictures, and she couldn't get her iPhone on their guest network, and she was wanting to play Pandora while she was shooting. So, like, I was, you know, obviously that's not totally our problem that she can't get on the guest network. It's not our device, but I was more curious of like why. Mm-hmm. So I set it up in client monitor to watch it try to connect. It never even tried. Like it was not even trying to get on DHCP at all. And what it came down to is when I got it into an area where I only saw one access point instead of two, mm-hmm. that it connected. But that shouldn't keep a device being able to get connected because that's, I mean, generally you want to be able to see kind of at least two so you can seamlessly roam.
Yeah.
And her phone would not connect.
I've seen similar things, you know, where iOS has a hard time deciding between two access points. We've got one room, our conference room in the school is almost exactly halfway between two different classrooms that have got an access point each. And it's the worst room in the school for Wi-Fi because you can just about see the same signal strength from two different base stations. And it seems to iOS in particular, Mac's not so much, although MacBook Air has its own issues with Wi-Fi at the moment. But with iOS devices, they really struggle to decide what to do in that situation.
Yeah, it was obviously a lot simpler when you could just wire into Ethernet because it just kind of worked, but yep. You sacrifice that portability. And, you know, and your enterprise network is different than the one at home. It's not as simple.
Most definitely. All right, so back to deployment 2014. 2014 is rapidly getting to be half over. It's now May. So our topic for tonight, Bradley, is something that you have told me offline that you know nothing about, which is always good. Because, I mean, why on a podcast would you need to know anything about the thing you talk about? Naming no names. We're going to talk tonight about choosing a reseller. And of course, Bradley, you're going to give us the US perspective where you don't have to deal with a reseller. You just go directly to Apple. Lucky you.
Yeah, it's different. And we all have that mindset of what we deal with is the norm. And we just, in the buying part of the process, the US just lives in a different environment than the rest of the world.
Yeah. Those people who are listening who don't intimately know both Europe and the United States, which is probably everybody, I mean, let's lay out the basic differences, right? In the US, you buy directly from Apple. You have a special portal on the Apple store page, am I right?
Yes, it's like an Apple education store. It's like you have to have a completely separate Apple ID, and I'm up to about 10 of those now. their password, you have to change the password every 90 days. You buy kind of one-off stuff through there. Mm-hmm. But if you're planning your deployment, you're probably working with your sales rep. You know, I've got an inside sales rep that's out of Texas. You know, most of Apple's education team is in Texas, if I'm correct.
Austin, I believe.
You know, they say Chattanooga is like the Austin of the East. That's what they say.
Mm.
I don't know if that's true or not.
Keep Chattanooga weird.
Yeah, we're real hip. We're getting the new Coca-Cola plant. So we already have like one, and then we're getting another one. So it's good to know.
Wow.
And so We have an inside sales rep who, you know, you pretty much deal with them when you're going through your buying process on like telling them what you want. You have an outside sales rep. His or her job is like to come by and take you to lunch, you know, once a year, mm-hmm. once every other year. We don't buy enough quantity to get the kind of hand holding from our outside sales rep. And I'm fine with that. I don't have time for vendors, to be honest with you, unless I really need to talk to them. Mm-hmm. And then we have a systems engineer, and ours is a really nice guy. I'm actually on my second one, but he was the first one I had. They kind of redid the territories a little bit, and I'll email him from time to time, ask him questions, or he'll email me with stuff that's, you know, it's most of them I've already heard about because of, you know, this show and the research that we do, but it just giving me heads up on things like managed distribution, things like that. Mm-hmm. But when you're actually putting together your quote and you're saying, hey, I need $90,000 worth of stuff, you don't want to buy that on the store because, you know, when you're working directly with someone, they can help you with the leasing process. They'll get you to Apple Financial, and then they can also get you kind of your mass quantity discounts.
Okay. So that's the American model. And I think mostly for historical reasons, I want to say, because if you think about the history of Apple has never been, or Apple has not for very long been the gigantic company that Apple is now. I think, you know, if you think about the whole history, the 80s, the 90s, good part of the 2000s as well, Apple was a numerically small company compared to almost all of its competitors. And it's only just now that they're on this massive hiring spree and becoming the large company that they need to be. So I think mostly for historical reasons, in most of the rest of the world, Apple works through resellers. And they have, you know, they do have business development managers in many countries, although there are some countries that don't have their own business development manager. The UK, I think, is divided into, I think, four territories, maybe five now, where in each of those areas in the UK has a BDM or two. And all across the UK and in other countries as well, there are Apple-authorized resellers. And it's one thing to be an authorized reseller. That means you get to sell Macs, right? But there are also, I'm trying to remember the phrase, I think it's Apple Solution Expert for Education. The exact words may not be right there, but there's an Apple authorized reseller, and then there's a tier above that, where resellers who have proven experience in education, or I believe the only other one is audio and video, get to put that on their title as well and focus their business more on the AV market, the pro photography and video market, or education. So ASEs for education are the people you tend to deal with in the UK for that kind of business. And it's rare. I don't know that it's true to say there are none, but it's uncommon for any of these organizations to be purely Apple. They tend to be much more of your sort of generic computing equipment supplier. And they will maybe have, if you're lucky, one or two people on staff who might be Apple experts in some way. But they're Apple experts in the sense that they've sort of been developed by the business to know a bit more about Apple. But there are, of course, still plenty of those organizations who will sell Apple kit but don't have anybody on staff who knows anything about it. So that's an important question to bear in mind as well.
Yeah, it's important to, I guess we should clarify that plenty of resellers in the U.S. sell Apple products. You know, your GovConnection, your CDWs, these folks all sell Apple products. Yep. Mac Authority here in the Southeast. But the issue is like if they know you're from a school and you take like your school tax exempt card and your school credit card, mm-hmm. they cannot sell you hardware. Like they can sell you accessories. Like I can go up to my local Mac Authority and buy a power cord, but I cannot buy a computer. Which is a pain when you need one in a pinch.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, again, so why do these companies call us and they'll say, you know, we sell Lenovo, we sell Apple, we sell IBM, and they say, well, we buy Apple, but we have to buy from Apple. And a lot of times they think, oh, no, you can buy from us. And it's like, no, you can't sell to us. Like, I don't even know that they know sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes you know their business better than they do.
Right. So, and again, a lot of these, you're right, a lot of these companies are, you know, there's a difference between selling you an iPad and being able to sell you an iPad deployment solution. There's a difference there.
Yeah, hugely. So I think, you know, I want to focus mostly on the kind of European reseller experience, but, you know, throw in your experience as well, Bradley, because it'll be useful for people who are in the States listening to understand if you don't have an organization that can give you this kind of service, then where are you going to get that from? If you've got to go directly to Apple, well, how does Apple or their partners fill in the gaps around the things that are in Europe, an integrated reseller would do the hardware and these other services for you. So if you think about where we are in the process of this kind of deployment topic that we've been talking about, we've talked about, you know, planning and pupil safety and infrastructure and device. And I think when you come to think about who your reseller might be, you're sort of at the point where you've decided how you're going to do it. You've figured out how you're going to fund it. You know that you've got the policy in place to make it work. You've done some staff development already, probably. And the question is, well, where are we going to get the kit from and how much are we going to pay? So I think the thing that often, like, schools are really used to getting discounts. And this is incredibly difficult when it comes to Apple. And I think the thing to understand, and I don't like conversations where it's like, you know, you're the customer, but you have to understand all the internal machinations of my business so you're sympathetic enough for me that you pay more than you feel you should pay, which is kind of an unfortunate conversation that sometimes goes on. It's like, you know, well, you have to understand that we have to pay this and we have to pay that, therefore we're not giving you any discount. But schools are very used to getting big discounts on a lot of computer stuff, particularly software, because the marginal cost is so low. In fact, it's zero. But you have to understand what a reseller does in terms of their business. The basic idea, and this is not hard to understand, is they buy equipment for a certain amount of money and they sell it to you for a certain amount of money, which is larger than the first amount of money, and then they trouser their difference. And the problem is, for most resellers in Europe, is that the margins on an iPad are literally razor thin. I mean, if you're on one iPad, a reseller might make between 1% and 3% of margin on selling that device. So what happens quite often when I deal with schools and they're like, right, well, you've convinced us, you've worked with us, we're going to do it. Now tell us who gives us the biggest discount on iPads. And I'm sort of like, well, actually sort of none of them are going to give you very much of a discount. Some of them might give you none at all. So it's people often find themselves kind of disappointed with resellers in the sense that they may be expecting a 10 or 15 or 20% discount and they may actually only get 1%. But the resellers don't have very much to play with when it comes to iPad specifically. Macs are a different story. Accessories are very much a different story. But on the iPad hardware itself, there's not much to play with for anybody who's reselling this kind of hardware.
Yeah, and it's very similar to working directly with Apple. If I buy a Mac, I get on top, I get $100 off pretty much every model. And as I add components, those components are also discounted as well. But if I buy, I think like kind of the standard discount, if you're buying let's say iPad Airs at $500 and you're buying a pack of 10, mm-hmm. I want to say they give you $10 to $20 off each of those.
Okay.
And so if you say to Apple, like, you gotta work with us on this. And they say, well, if you get Apple Care, we have more room to work with you. And so it's like, and it's kind of what you're saying is, you know, that it's
like, if you give us this massive purchase of pure margin, we can maybe take something off the other side.
We can give you the Apple Care. Yeah. And you know, the thing is they don't have to. Does Apple have the margins on the iPad? Sure. They're not making 1-3% margin. They're making probably 30% margin. I think they're, you know, what is their, you know, if you look at their company earnings. So they've got the margin.
30 to 35%.
But where are you going to get? I mean, most of the time, if you're talking to Apple, you're not like negotiating with HP as well. And that was kind of the biggest change mindset-wise around here is we would pit Dell versus HP versus Lenovo. And you just see whoever gives you the cheapest box. And somebody, they would keep slashing their price, and you know, because they knew they were, because they're all selling the same widgets essentially.
Yep.
But Apple's feeling is like, we'll work with you, but like, we have a premium product, and so you'll pay this or you won't buy it at all. And that's not, it's not, I don't think that's an arrogance. It's just, it's a protection of the brand.
Oh yeah, and it's business reality, right? But I think what's really interesting about this kind of new mobile era in computing is that none of these devices are real substitutes for each other. Right, so if you're trying to decide between the Microsoft Surface Pro 2 and the iPad, and you know the Samsung Galaxy 12-inch tablet thing, it's not the case that you know we've decided right we're going Android, and you know we've got this choice of perfectly substitutable devices, and it doesn't matter which one of these we get, because if you get one from I'm even making up the names now because I don't know them, you know, Acer and then Samsung and then somebody else and somebody else. None of those are going to be the same thing either, right? It's not like you can specify, you know, 10 inches of Android tablet, please give me your price for four companies. It's, those are all differentiated products as well. And it used to be, you're right, it was always the argument against going with Apple as you were locking yourself into a single supplier. But if you're going with your Nexus 7 devices, how many people can serve your Nexus 7 device? One company, right? So all the mobile era has, you know, everybody has done an Apple, basically. And sure, you know, there is some commonality between Android devices, but not as much as people think there are, and certainly nothing like as much as there was between, say, a Dell Inspiron and a Lenovo ThinkPad back in the day if you were trying to source two different kinds of laptop. So you're right. It's the way business is at the moment here, and it's something just to bear in mind as you go ahead.
Yeah, it's just, and I think that's for a lot of like purchasing departments, especially at bigger schools. I think they're kind of taken aback by the reality is, you know, they're used to saying, okay, we're buying this much. What are you giving us off? 10%, 20%, and that just, you know, it just doesn't exist.
Well, they're used to people playing the game, you know, and coming in to buy the business by, you know, coming in with a massively inflated bid in the first round, and then you've got to go through tedious round after round to, you know, right, forget that. Seriously, what's your price? No, seriously, what's your price? And I think in some ways, you know, buying the Apple way is very much more straightforward in the sense you're just like, well, that's the price, right? Can we afford it or not? And get on with your life sort of thing.
I have gotten a couple of steaks off Apple. I will say that.
I had a $40 crab sandwich once on Apple's dime. It was the best crab sandwich I've ever had. I didn't know you could make crab sandwiches that well. Anyway, yeah, not my common experience, I have to say. So yeah, not much margin on the iPad for a reseller, but of course, where a reseller is supposed to kind of do their job in a sense is that they're supposed to take the bare hardware and be a value-added reseller by somehow adding value, and I'm not saying that sarcastically yet, but I'll say it sarcastically in a couple of minutes. They're supposed to add some value for you on the bundle so that you get a package rather than you just get a box of iPads showing up on your door. And of course, there's tons of ways that they can do that. You know, you said that you can go to your Mac Authority and buy the accessories or whatever, but in a big deployment, it would be typical, if uncommon probably, to, you know, look at, you know, we're deploying 250 iPads. In order to support that, we want 15 Apple TVs, 25 VGA adapters. We maybe need a MacBook to do Apple configurator stuff. We might even need a Wi-Fi network in the school. And all of those things will, of course, need cases as well, and possibly an insurance product that goes along with it, and maybe an extended warranty. And all of those additional things that are not the iPad itself are opportunities for the reseller to build up their margins so that they can make some money on the whole deal, even if they don't make money on the actual iPad itself. And in some ways, the iPad is the vehicle that the reseller rides in on to then make a deal that's profitable for them on all the other things as well. So people have to be a wee bit sympathetic to that, although I don't think you should be too sympathetic to it, because that's the business, right? And somebody else will cut the throat, even if the first guy won't cut the throat for you. But you do have to be aware that if you're screwing them down in the price of the hardware alone, then you have to expect that you're not going to get much of a break on the cases as well, and the Apple TVs and all these other things. You know, you've got to realize that they're a business too.
Right, and you know, it's the resellers outside of the US are kind of the reverse. Like you said, they're selling the iPads so they can sell you extra services. You know, Apple has professional development you can buy. They actually have it in packages on their website to help you with, you know, teacher training or OS X server deployment, various things you can buy, and they're not cheap. But the thing is A, it's Apple, so they don't have to be, because, you know, it's kind of like, who provides the best training for Aerohive products? Probably Aerohive themselves.
Yeah.
And so Apple probably feels like they have the best trainers in the world. And also, you know, they do these things. They sell, again, they make margin off these adapters and things like that. But they do all of these things in order to sell you the iPad. You know, Apple resells Jamf and Aerohive as well. Mm-hmm. And they do all that to have you a solution, just like the resellers do. But their angle is to sell as many iPads as possible. You know, they are not hitting their margins for the year off Aerohive access points. No. They do that so they will have a solution that can, you know, the solution will work, and things like that. So it's almost like a reverse business model.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely is. So I suppose the question, we've mentioned all the different kinds of things that you can get alongside your iPads in the deployment. The cases, obviously, possibly printers, Apple TV, MacBooks. Now, I'm not necessarily saying you need to have all of these in your laundry list for shopping, but these are the kind of things that a good reseller can put together a package that includes a lot of these things, and then they all come at once and they're all supported by the same people and deployed together and so on. So that kind of leads into the question, Bradley, of what do you need from a reseller? And that's a really very localized question. Do you want to take a wee break for our sponsor and then we'll bring people back on that one?
Yeah, let's do that. And I've got one quick question for you before we move on.
Okay.
I want to thank the fine folks at Jamp Software for sponsoring the show this week. They keep the lights on at out-of-school headquarters, help pay our hosting bills. And so if you're looking for a mobile device management solution, definitely give Jamp a look. They've got some great webinars you can sign up for. Mm-hmm. I think you'll be satisfied. They provide IT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies, such as Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs in education organizations. Now, with Casper Focus, they have placed these great technologies directly into the hands of the teachers who work with students every single day. Casper Focus allows teachers to quickly gain students' attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select the specific Apple TV assigned to their classroom. They can choose and distribute iBooks and even initiate AirPlay right from within Casper Focus. So learn what else you can do with Casper Focus at jampsoftware.com. That's jamfsoftware.com. So if you're, again, if you're looking for a mobile device management solution for your school, for your business, definitely give them a call and let them know that you heard about them from Out of School Podcast. So my question is, you know, we talked 2 or 3 months ago about managed service providers. Mm-hmm. Have you seen a reseller that says, we will, you can buy everything from us and it can, and we can handle your deployment? Like where they will bring your iPads ready to hand to students. Like the mobile device management system set up, they will install your Wi-Fi, they will do everything. It's a almost like a, we want iPads, do it.
I have certainly heard of that model. You know, that model is not too uncommon in this, in the bigger scheme of things. And I've heard it more for PCs rather than for iPads so far. And I'll sort of explain where I've seen it. BT, you know, the former British Telecom in the UK, are now a kind of, you know, solution provider. You know, nobody can just actually provide you a service anymore. They've got to give you a solution. And a number of local authorities in Scotland and in England, I believe, have signed up for a managed computing service, an internet service with BT. There's been other companies that have done it, a company called Northgate at one time, and various others. But the reason I haven't seen it for iPads for the most part is because those contracts are, they're so kind of long-term and rigidly specified that, you know, the possibility of bringing in an iPad and getting connected to one of these networks is basically zero. You know, and it's only just like now, 4 years into iPad, that people are starting to think, well, maybe we've just about figured out how we could put an iPad on one of these managed networks. So yeah, I have seen that model. I've seen it from the very biggest companies. You know, you're talking the BTs, the Capitas of the UK and so on, who deal with schools for very large amounts of money. And I have seen smaller resellers trying to do it with iPad, but I'm not sure I've necessarily seen it with quite the right model just yet. Because quite often what I see is, right, we'll sell you a laptop, we'll put Apple Configurator on it, and you know, we'll put apps on for you, tell us what apps you want on your iPads, and then we'll just bring them to the school and that's it done. Right? Whereas I think what I'd rather see schools doing is I'd rather see schools building up the capacity in-house for somebody to manage that themselves. That's a conversation for a little later.
Yeah, you know, as we mentioned, and really that's the kind of the crux of the series, is mm-hmm. that deployments require more thought process now. I could see an opportunity for some service providers to say, look, you don't have to learn it. We'll take care of it. Not saying that's the right model or not. I'm just saying I'm surprised we haven't seen more of that, you know, kind of promoted to us.
Well, you know, it's absolutely conceivable that you could become a service provider like that. You know, if you have, think about it, if you've got device enrollment from Apple and you've got an MDM solution like Casper and you've got a managed Wi-Fi system like Aerohive put in the school, then you go and you build in the Wi-Fi, get that all set up. Then you set up your MDM and then you just get those devices delivered from Apple, and the school can just hand them out. They'll come up on the Wi-Fi. They will automatically be enrolled in your MDM. And if you organize your groups and hierarchies right, you can just see, you know, apps starting to flow out to all of these devices one by one by one as you go. I can perfectly conceivably see imagine a network operations center somewhere where people just sit there and work an MDM system that pushes apps to and from iPads deployed in schools remotely.
And the schools never even know what MDM solution they have.
Yeah, they just phone up a guy and say, all my third years should have explain everything, make it so.
And then they get a bill
for that. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
They get a bill for that, you know. So, yeah, that's a free business idea. I'll take 10%. You can take 10%.
Yeah, that'll work.
Yep. call us. So, yeah, the question, Bradley, was what do you need from a reseller? What is it that you need a reseller to do for you? You know, this is beyond just, you know, get us a printer and get us a MacBook as well. But in terms of the services, what kind of thing might you want a reseller to do for you? I got a couple of ideas here, but there's questions to be answered first, I think. And of course, the theme of this whole series, Bradley, is the answer is different for different schools. But here's the question you've got to think about. So the question number one is, how much expertise do you have in-house? Do you have somebody in-house who's an expert on IT? Do you have people who run servers for you already, who, you know, image your desktop computers and manage them and all that kind of stuff? And if you have that kind of experience, then you probably don't need a whole lot from your reseller. You're probably looking for whoever will give me the best price on the kit because I don't need anything else. And that was the situation we were in when we went for our iPad refresh this year, was that I explicitly went to, you know, four resellers and I said, look, guys, I don't need your help, not to put too fine a point on it. I'm the guy that you hire to help you out with this stuff. So come and just tell me what the cheapest iPad you can give me is. And as long as I was kind of upfront with them about that, that was fine, you know. And they didn't waste their time trying to sell me on a bundle of services that I didn't need, and I didn't waste my time telling them I didn't need it. That's kind of at one very extreme end of the spectrum. I think not many schools are in a situation where they have somebody on staff who can do that kind of thing for them. So I think the middle ground is, how much do you want to develop your capacity for managing that? Do you have somebody on staff who maybe hasn't done this before, but would like to really know how to do it? And schools, I suppose, would be fortunate to have somebody who's prepared to take on that amount of extra work and responsibility. But, you know, there's always ambitious young people looking for methods of career advancement, and this would be a super duper one. I mean, this is the 21st century equivalent of being able to play the piano for a teacher. You know the story, like if you can play the piano or play the guitar, you're always guaranteed a job as a teacher. Or if you can take the PE, or if you can, you know, if you can draw or paint or sing.
Well, and I think, you know, it's important when you say how much do you want to develop your own capacity. You don't have to do, it isn't like you're either going to do it all or you do none of it. You could even say, look, you handle the Wi-Fi and the infrastructure and the LAN. Like, I'm not interested in being a network admin, but I think I can, I'm going to work with Jamf, then I'm going to get their hosted service, so I don't have to worry about that. And I can handle that. Like, it's, you know, that's a reasonable model, especially if you have an IT department of one, or you're using someone that teaches in the morning is doing IT in the afternoons. Like, that's a reasonable model, is to figure out what you think you can learn quickly. And then just farm out the rest. You know, you can find people to manage your network infrastructure. Not saying it's not it's very difficult and it takes a lot of skills, but that's not a new skill set.
Yeah, there is well understood. It's a solved problem, basically, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. So I think there's also a conversation to be had in here about what parts of this are sort of long-term strategic, and what parts of this are sort of low-level, tactical, day-to-day. And I think I have this kind of philosophy about that, that it's okay to outsource the strategic stuff, but it's important to keep the tactical stuff in-house. I'll explain what I mean by that, right? My broadband connection, right? What do I want from that? I want it up, and I want it fast, and I want it cheap. Pick any two, of course, right? But, you know, that's what I want from it, right? And I don't want traffic shaped and a few other things, but beyond that, I'm not sitting there tweaking my cable modem every day to make it do something different. I turn it on. If it works, I don't want to see it again. And I think that kind of service is totally fine to outsource. I mean, I outsource that to Virgin Media. They put a box in the room, and fair's fair. It hasn't always been up, but more recently it's been a lot better. But it is very cheap and fast. But on the other hand, there's things that I need to be able to do on a day-to-day basis in the school that I must have control over. For example, how long does it take, or who do I have to coordinate with to get an app put onto iPads? I want that to be one person, one phone call to me, and I want it to be 4 minutes and I can get it done. We're not quite there yet, but with managed distribution, we're going to be there very soon. I don't want to have to phone up a reseller and wait for them to send a guy out who will then take my iPads and do what I would have done anyway if I'd just known how to do it. Right? That's a tactical capability that you need to have responsive to the needs of your teachers in the school. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And especially if you're following our advice with, you know, looking, if you're doing one-to-one and you have access to managed distribution, mm-hmm. you know, Apple Configurator is, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Finicky. And, you know, when I was doing 7.1.1, I had one, it just like would not put it on there. It kept giving me some firmware error message. Eventually just did it over the air and it worked. And so, yeah, if Apple Configurator can be finicky. You know, the hope is with managed distribution that this is kind of a simple process. It's a couple clicks of a button. So why would you want to wait, you know, 4 to 6 hours and pay, you know, $150 service call for a guy to click some buttons?
Yes, exactly. And I think that's the thing is, do I want to pay that every time I want a button clicked, or do I want to learn how to click the button myself? Now, you said, you know, it's possible for somebody to manage your Wi-Fi and for you to do the MDM. There's also, within Casper, and I'm sure other MDMs as well, there's multiple levels of capability inside the MDM. So, you know, I'm, of course, you know, I'm the root on my server, and I can do everything in my Casper, and I've got all the keys to the kingdom. But it's possible that I could set that up, and then I could give, or my reseller could set it up, and then different teachers in the school could be given access rights to, for example, assign apps to students. And maybe that's the only level of capability you get in Casper, but that's enough. And then teachers can do some of that tactical stuff themselves, or maybe one teacher can do it for a department or something like that. And then it means that, you know, the server's managed correctly and safely and securely, and the scope for disaster, let's put it most bluntly, is quite limited because, you know, the teachers don't have full administrator rights to the whole server, for example. And Casper actually has a very fine-grained list of capabilities that you can assign or deny based on the account ID of the person logged in.
Well, and if you are going to sub out certain parts of it, you know, if I'm trying to think of the best way to say that, if you're going to sub out your network infrastructure, like say your Wi-Fi and everything behind it, and you're going to take control of the MDM, I would kind of talk to you which vendor you're going to use and make sure they're familiar with your MDM products. Understand, you know, theoretically how they work and how they interact with things, because you said that the Wi-Fi and the MDM can talk to each other and there's some integration there. So what you don't want, you know, if you're going to do that, you either want them to have a little bit of expertise, or you want to be an expert in your MDM where you can help them do the integration as well.
Yeah. So I think what you're looking for there is we're talking about certification levels at the reseller. So obviously being an Apple solution expert for education is one kind of, you know, badge that people have. You know, Apple says they know about Apple products and they know about them in the context of education. So great. Further to that, you know, are these people, do they have a reseller certification levels from Aerohive? Do they have it from Jamf? These are kind of the questions you're going to be wanting to ask. And, you know, Jamf, like many other MDM vendors, have reseller certification programs as well. So you can look for certain levels of capacity. And you might say that as part of your tender process is, well, we will only work with people who have, you know, certified wireless network administrator or above on staff that we can have access to. And be very specific about what you want. I want somebody who knows this product. I don't just want a guy who can sell me the licenses and run a Linux installer. Not that any reseller would give you somebody like that.
No.
No. So I think the flexibility question is really important. You know, what can you outsource and what do you have to have in the school? Because bear in mind as well, if this is your first iOS deployment, some of this stuff you're going to learn a lot very quickly, right? The beauty of a steep learning curve is that you learn a lot in a short period of time. So if you, unless you're somehow certain that the apps that you choose before you have any experience of teaching with iPad are the apps you will always want, then you maybe want to figure out how to develop that capability in-house. You know, either find a teacher if you have IT people and staff. Maybe the investment is more in training for them rather than for spending money with your reseller to have them do it for you all the time. And I've mentioned certification before. There's the possibility of sending staff on those certification courses is something that's probably worth exploring as well. Although those tend not to be cheap at the higher levels.
Yeah, I agree.
You've done that, haven't you, Bradley?
Yeah, I've got a handful. And I mean, they're, you know, the certifications are great, but it's really what I've like going back to the ones I have from Apple. The classes, you know, the classes are so important because you kind of get out of your comfort zone at the school and you go hear it. Not, you know, hear it from somebody that's trained and certified and hear like kind of like Apple way to do it.
Yeah.
And you start to understand like the methodology behind the madness. So like if you're wondering why this works this way, in OS 10, you can learn about why. If you're wondering why Arrow Hive's interface does this and does that, you can kind of learn the methodology behind it. And it's good to, you know, the one thing I like about going offsite for training is you kind of can step out of your day-to-day role. And you can focus. You know, the problem with like, you know, reading books and things like that is it's hard to make time to do that.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, if you've designed something, it's hard to conceive of how it could be designed any other way. And I think when you go to these events and you sit down with people and you know, the one I always love is when I go to something and people sit down beside me and say, so you're that one-to-one guy. How many staff do you have? I'm like, you're looking at them. It's me and nobody else. And folk are like, well, we've got three people for that number of computers, you know. Like, envy and jealousy just rises within me. But the point I'm trying to make is that when you talk to other people and how they've architected their deployment, sometimes you say, well, thank goodness I didn't do it that way. Other times you think, I really wish I'd done it that way. Maybe I'll do that way next year. That's really clever. You know, and I think the favorite one when Casper administrators get together is, tell me what your smart groups are. You know, how do you organize that? You know, how do you put iPads in classes and so on? So you know, I had a guy visiting from South Africa not so long ago, and we sort of did a whole lot of stuff in the classroom. And then at the end, he was like, well, going to show me your Casper dashboard. I was like, yeah. So I showed him my smart groups, and he just gets his phone out taking picture of my screen. He's like, I'm going to do that one, you know. So yeah, that's a really cool thing to find out, is, you know, just the little kind of tips and tricks that you meet when you hang about with people who are working in the same kind of system as you.
It's kind of like the sharing the Casper dashboard is like seeing other people's iPhone home screens.
Yes, exactly. It's the MDM administrator's home screen post. Okay, so these are some of the questions you want to think about. And resellers will, I won't say resellers will tell you anything you want to hear, but what they will do is, you know, they have certain ways that they do it. And I think as with the sort of idea of a managed service where we have this one cookie cutter deployment model that we just drop on schools for £250,000 a year and, you know, we know it works. It's not the greatest. It's not very responsive. It doesn't update very quickly. But at least we can repeat it for a fixed cost and we know it works. And that's how resellers working on margins of 1% to 2% actually kind of get by, is that they know more or less how these deployments work. And they will drop their standard deployment model on you. And sometimes those deployment models are based more on how much capability they've got in the organization. You know, it's what they know, so it's what you're going to get. And if you want to step outside that, then you may have to argue a little bit more for some more flexibility. And that may, in fact, cost you as well. So it's worth just bearing in mind that if you tell them the first thing that you've thought of in terms of deployment design, they may come back at you and say, have you thought of this? And it's not always that they're just saying, well, this is the thing we want, so we're going to push it on you. But it's also that, you know, they've probably seen 15 or 20 of these things where you've only thought of one. Unless you've done taken our advice and gone visiting as well. So let's think about some other things that a reseller can do for you. You've done the deal, you've got your shopping list. What can they do for you after that? And some things I've seen, I don't know if you've seen any other ideas, Bradley, but organizing the purchase, obviously, and getting the equipment to you and so on. Sometimes I've had people offer to send staff to come and help me unbox the things. That's not an insignificant offer, by the way. You know, the time taken to unbox these things. I know you, Bradley, get them in the sort of frustration-free packaging. That's not the way it comes in the UK.
No. It's not, if you're used to Amazon's frustration-free, yeah. It's frustration because they're packaged so tight in there. Yeah. They just don't come in the retail boxes. It's like brown boxes. You got to think, like, I'd like to be the guy that sells boxes to Apple and Amazon.
Oh, yeah. That's a living right there. But we, in the UK, we get them in the retail box. You know how the sort of possibly apocryphal stories about how Johnny Ives designed the box so that it takes 14 seconds of anticipation for the box to open when you get a new Apple product? Well, see, when you open 120 of them in one day, that's 14 seconds starts to add up to quite a lot. So punch an air hole in the top first and it comes off a lot quicker. Yeah, don't do that because you'll punch your iPad.
People always say to me, like, isn't it fun to open like new computers all the time? It's like, no, it's not. That's because that means that's the beginning of the deployment. You know, because I'll have people come and go on the church staff all, you know, throughout the year. So I'm always kind of imaging computers on the side. Mm. And it's like, it's just work when it comes in. Like, yeah, that's just, well, I have to, then I have to like open it up and boot it up and image it. Like, that takes a while. So yeah, it's like kind of, it's more fun when it's my personal one.
They don't even smell quite so strongly of a new computer anymore, do they?
No, and you're callous to it. It's like your fingers are all paper cut from opening them. And
I'm blaming Greenpeace for the loss of that smell.
I blame Greenpeace for a lot. I'm joking. You know what I miss? I miss when the laptops came with both display adapters. Do you remember that?
Oh, those were the days. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that was when it was the mini DVI port, and it would come with two in the box, like for free. Now they're $30 a piece.
Now you get two stickers.
Yeah. Yes.
We have thousands of those stickers all over the school. Yeah, so they can do a lot of that kind of stuff, you know, unpacking the box and things, and asset tagging, if you're doing asset tagging, that kind of thing could often be done at the reseller. Another thing they can often do is they can pull you a spreadsheet of the serial numbers that you're going to get as well. That can be useful as well to load that into some kind of inventory system you might have, or even just to supply to your insurance company. Here's a list of all our serial numbers. Those are the ones to be covered. So they can sort of do a wee bit more kind of pre-delivery stuff for you as well. I've seen this happen as well, and some resellers are really quite good at this, where if a school's doing a one-to-one model where the parent has to buy the device, they can build or open up a portal on their website where parents can be directed to, and it's sort of branded with the school's logo and all that kind of stuff, and it only shows the device specs that the school has specified that the parents should buy and the approved accessories and so on, and the parents can actually choose from maybe one or two or three different devices and then check out, and it'll be delivered possibly to the school rather than to the parent or whatever, approved cases and things like that. I've seen that done a couple of places and it's been successful. It's that kind of model, you know, if that model is going ahead in a kind of pure fashion, that can be quite a useful thing to get done. By no means can every reseller do that because it's quite an advanced capability, but if you're planning that model, that might be something you want to ask a reseller is, we want parents to buy it. Can you help us help the parents actually just get the right thing? Because that's not nothing.
I know that's one of the things that our local reseller, Mac Authority, will do. Is, you know, they've actually got a business sales rep, and so he works with businesses, and he will actually work with schools if they're doing like a parent purchase model, because obviously the school's not buying it, but the parents are buying it. So he can come by and they can pick out their approved cases, and so the parents just have to go to the local retail store, which is, you know, handy, and they can just pick out their iPad, and then they have the cases there they can pick from as well.
Yep. So that's a good option if you are thinking about that kind of model. Bear in mind that that's something you could ask your reseller if they have the capability to do. Okay, just last couple of things, Bradley. Extended warranties. We talked about AppleCare already, and sort of derided it a little bit as pure margin, which of course it is. But quite often, you know, schools moving into iOS deployments are obviously quite nervous about, you know, they've got to answer the question that every parent asks all the time is, won't it get broken straight away? Which, of course, we've argued already. The answer is not really. But quite a few resellers are quite smart about this, and they're looking at, you know, schools who've got a bit of experience like us, and they're sort of gathering information about, well, what are your breakage rates actually? You know, we're looking at, we're now 4 years into some of these deployments, and can, you know, what are your historical breakage rates and numbers and so on? And what they're doing is they're basically working together with an insurance company, and they're just playing the percentages, and they're saying, well, you know, on average you break 4% a year. Okay, we'll sell you this amount of coverage for this amount of money, and then they will take their chances in that you'll probably not achieve a breakage rate much higher than the worldwide average or whatever numbers they base it on. Those extended warranties can often be a lot cheaper than buying AppleCare or AppleCare Plus. Because, of course, AppleCare is just a warranty. It doesn't cover damage, whereas some of these extended warranties may also cover one or two instances of damage, like the AppleCare Plus warranty does as well.
And you know, some insurance companies can offer insurance against theft as well, where AppleCare obviously doesn't cover that.
Yeah, yeah. Quite often, you know, a reseller will put together a whole sort of finance package that includes the extended warranty, includes damage and theft cover. Another thing that is sometimes offered in there, particularly in recessionary times like have sort of just passed in the UK, I've seen it offered, you know, if there's a parent contribution model, then the insurance also provides what they call gap coverage for repayments. So if parents maybe lose their job or something and they can't pay the repayments anymore, they can claim on this policy so that the repayments are covered and the pupil doesn't have to lose their device as well.
That's the number one amount of direct mail that I get on a week-to-week basis is iPad insurance coverage. There's a company called Worth Avenue here in the States, which they must spend a fortune in advertising, because I get a very nice postcard every single week.
It's absolutely shameful how much education businesses just rely on straight spam. You know, yeah. legitimate businesses just like faxing you all the time and emailing you and just putting your email on things that you never signed up for. Shame on everybody.
Well, we get an offer over fax once a week that somebody wants to buy our school. Once a week. So who's faxing us?
I am a Nigerian prince. I wish to establish a school.
I get a ton of spam, and it's very tough because it's hard to like wade through what you actually care about, because there's just so many people calling you to sell you cables and things like that. And I know that's how they get new business, but it's like it's they all come in the spring. It's just crazy.
Yeah, and the printer cartridges. Who do you get your printer cartridges from, sir? None of your
like
business go away.
It's like Amazon. You know, it's like I don't care if you're cheaper. It's just easier. I don't want to talk to anybody.
Yep. Yep. So the extended warranty question is an interesting one. You know, if the price is low enough, I'm not against going for something like that. I don't think an extended warranty by itself is really worthwhile, just because there's so few moving parts on an iPad. But extended damage protection is probably worth it. If the price is right, and you've got to really look at, you know, what kind of damage do we expect to happen? You know, what's reasonable? You know, I've told you my numbers before. We've seen 2% damage and 2% failure per year on average over 4 years now. If I'm going to pay, you know, 15% of the cost of the device to cover a 4% risk of damage, that's not good value. You know, put that money in the bank and just pay for the repair out of your pocket.
Would love, you know, maybe we should figure out a way to like set up some sort of like form that we could ask schools to fill out, and then we could start gathering damage rates and failure rates across, you know, certain size deployments and see if there's any like, you know, scalability. You know, that would be interesting to see everybody else's.
Yeah, that might be an interesting summer project, just to, you know, throw up a Google form and just keep bugging Twitter about it until we get enough data. I threw that question out on Twitter a couple of days ago, and a few people came back to me, you know, and they were saying, well, we've seen hardly any damage, or we've had a couple of issues, you know, with switch gear or hardware or whatever. But, you know, the general consensus was low, you know. And I think unless you're doing something very badly wrong, then we're still, you know, 4 years in, we're not seeing huge numbers of damage.
Well, and that goes back to, because there's not spinning platter hard drives in there. And, They're just it's different style devices.
And there's not 100 micro switches on the top of the case that can be pinged off.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Or if it's vomited on, you hope you just can wipe down the glass.
You haven't really gotten over that, have you?
No, I really haven't. That was like 3 years ago. I still haven't gotten over that.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know what I would do if that happened. Yeah, so the last thing I had in my list here, Bradley, was just that some resellers will offer like device configuration and app installation. And I think, you know, we sort of covered that, but I am of the opinion that A, it's not that hard for somebody to learn, and B, you don't want to have to wait for somebody to come out and work Apple Configurator for you. You need to have more in-house control over that, because that's, you know, that's kind of like, you know, imagine you had, if you were running a reading book scheme for young children and you had to phone somebody up to come and put the reading book back on the shelf and get another one out for you. To me, that's kind of the same level of, you know, don't be ridiculous, we can do that ourselves sort of thing. Now, of course, there's certainly stuff to learn. It's not like you're just going to sit there and intuit how app deployment works on a large-scale iOS program. But, of course, somebody's going to learn. And, you know, this is education, right? People should be able to learn things, you know. We teach all the time, how come we can't learn anything new ourselves? So I think that's something I really quite strongly feel should be an in-house capability. And I feel the same about internet filtering, actually, that that's something that should be sort of tactically worked out by the school, rather than having to like fill in a form and wait for a fortnight before somebody can unblock a URL you critically need in the next 20 minutes. So that's kind of where I stand in both of those things.
Well, and going back to the filtering, it's not like we're asking people to build Linux boxes to do this. You know, it's really not difficult. Like in our SonicWall, you log in, you go to security, you click on content filter. You say there's a, you know, you click on your profile, and we just have one single one. You say custom list. That's like, I mean, it's really not difficult. It's, you know, it's once you do it one time, you know where it's at.
Yeah, most definitely. So I think, you know, I guess to sort of recap what we said, you know, I mean, I think I don't want people to go away from this with the sense that I'm like really down on resellers. I think, obviously, in the UK, that is how one works with that, get Apple products, and you have to work with these people. I think what's important, and I suppose one of the reasons why we do this show and why we're certainly doing this series, is so that when you sit down with somebody from a reseller, you know the questions to ask them before they tell you what to think about it. And I think if you have followed along with this series, you are at least as well armed as most people who will come from a reseller and going into that meeting where we decide how we're going to do our deployment. And if you don't feel that way, you can hire me or Bradley to come and sit with you.
And I will cut my rates to be cheaper than Fraser.
Well,
slash the margins.
You don't have sales tax, right?
No.
Yeah, no. That's a 20% hit on my fee.
And I will share my Amazon Prime account with you. I get 5 of those.
You can borrow my Kindle Fire TV.
Yeah, I will lend you any book in my library.
Dear. Yeah, so resellers, they are good people at heart. They have a business to run. You know, they're not a charity. They're not there just to help you get something for nothing. Resellers have got to eat too. But at the same time, don't let them just sell you anything, right? And use this podcast, use this series to be as well informed as you can be before you sit down with them, so that you know when they're telling you what's true, and you know when they're so that you know what they're telling you is true, or you can tell when it's not.
Great advice.
That's it. Okay, shall we leave it there for this week? We're a little under the hour, first time in a while.
Yes, yeah, I think we'll wrap it up. We should drag out the exit so we're over an hour to keep the trend going.
Okay, so I am about to pack up and drive off to a training day tomorrow, in school marketing. That's my Friday. I'm looking forward to it. I might learn something.
We have field day tomorrow, so that'll be fun. It means I'll be in my office with nobody around.
And the window's closed. Okay, so let's tell people where let's beg for stars. We haven't done that in a while. Ratings on iTunes are super helpful, to help other people find the show. So you can hit iTunes and download the podcast, obviously, but also leave us a rating and review. It would be really appreciated. I'm spears.org on the web, Fraser Spears on Twitter.
And if you have anything that you sell, an app you develop, or you know of a company you work with that would be a great sponsor for the show, we're always looking for new sponsors, and they can get in contact with us on our website at outofschool.net. And I am Bradley Chambers on Twitter and on the web at chambersdaily.com.
Okay, super. Good talking to you, Bradley.
Have a good week.